Your sofa moment isn't a failure. It's sacred. Author Valerie Jones joined us this week to talk about what happens when women finally stop abandoning themselves and start choosing their truth.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Valerie Jones on the show, and we had a great conversation about what it really means to be selfish, how to stop people pleasing, and the path to radical self-trust and healing. I hope this episode is valuable to anyone who might be listening. Stay tuned for the full episode. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Valerie Jones is joining us. Valerie is the author of The Selfish Year, a transformational memoir about reclaiming your life, identity, and power through the radical act of choosing yourself. Today, Valerie and I will be discussing what it really means to be selfish in a healthy, healing way, the trap of people-pleasing and self-abandonment, how journaling, intuition, and radical responsibility lead to healing and freedom. Welcome, Valerie.
Thanks, Heather. So excited to be here today.
Well, I am so excited to have you, and I just want to jump right in. But first, Valerie, for our listeners, would you share a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I became a life coach 11 years ago after my first divorce. I had 24 years of marriage, 3 kids, and I'd been a stay-at-home mom for 15 years. But during my divorce process, a friend of mine was my coach, actually. She was training to be a coach, and she's like, does anyone need practice? Or does anyone want to be a practice client? I was like, yes, please. And it helped me so much that I was like, this is what I want to do. So I became a certified coach 11 years ago. And then over that time, I got married again, divorced again, and it led me on a really intense healing journey personally. And where I am now and what's come out of that has been my book, The Selfish Year. I have my Selfish Woman podcast, and I do retreats and public speaking and writing all around this concept of women really getting their power back and reclaiming their own excitement about life and finding a new direction after major transitions. A lot of that is divorce. And so it's been a really amazing journey for me to find myself here in this place now.
Well, that is amazing. Such a great experience that you've had and sharing now with so many others. So let's jump right in and start with your definition of selfish. If you can share what that means to you and why it's not a bad thing.
Exactly. The first episode of my podcast 4 years ago was selfish is not a dirty word. Because it's a confronting word for women, isn't it? Like, yeah. We think of it as like, this is everything I was taught not to be. Self-absorbed, arrogant, self-centered. But for me, I was raised to be a people pleaser, the good girl, the nice one, which really didn't work well for me. And I thought being selfless was the way to go. And if I put everybody else first, then life would work well for me. And it really didn't. And so I was like, well, what if I decide to be selfish in the sense of being full of myself? Because if you're not full of yourself, what are you full of? Other people's opinions, fear, anxiety, worry, people pleasing, all of the stuff that keeps us trapped and stuck in a smaller version of ourself. And so I reframed it as, what if I choose myself first? What if I prioritize my needs, my wants? And what would happen if I did that? And I started realizing that how I'm deciding selfish means for me and for the women that get it is when you put yourself first and you really make decisions from a deep connection to your true self, it changes everything. And not only that, when you do decide to give to others, it's from overflow. It's from abundance. And it's from joy. Instead of resentment and exhaustion and overwhelm, it really changes the game for women who maybe have been conditioned to be people pleasers and givers to the detriment of their own health, their own energy, their own success.
Mm-hmm. I think that happens to a lot of us. And I mean, come on, as girl, think of like what like society has taught us. I mean, I don't know if it's different now. I hope it is, right? Like for our daughters and children now, but like before, you know, be good, be quiet, be follow the rules, do what you are told. I mean, please everybody else. Yeah. Don't like speak up for yourself and say, well, I want something different. I think there was so much of that even you might, I mean, I'll just say for an example, if I was be like, oh, I'm not a people pleaser. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, I am. Like I have worked through that. There was certainly a period of time where I absolutely was. You know, one thing that I harped on at least one of my daughters for a while, because she was always saying sorry. And I was like, you don't need to be sorry. These aren't things to be sorry for. But like, it's as if you let us down. Like, you didn't, there's nothing to be sorry for. You shouldn't, that word. And I don't know if that's just like a tick, is something that just comes naturally. But like, I feel like women in general, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And it's like, well, wait, we don't need to be sorry.
Exactly. We've been conditioned and programmed, like you said, by the patriarchy, by culture, by our upbringing, by media, to be smaller versions of ourselves, to shapeshift, to make other people comfortable. And what happens is we end up abandoning ourselves to make everybody else happy. And yeah, saying sorry is one of those big things that we've been trained to do. And it just is automatic. But when you challenge yourself on that, it's like, wait, did I actually do something wrong? If so, then yeah, sorry is warranted. But if not, if you're just uncomfortable or somebody else is uncomfortable, let's not say sorry, because it is a diminishing of our own power of saying I did something wrong by being bigger or making a choice that disappoints you. And that's something that we really need to work on.
I just like it just resonates with me so much now. And I think probably all our listeners, I hope. But earlier in your book, you introduce us to First Girl and Hurt Girl. Hurt Girl learned that abandoning herself was how to get love and approval, and shape-shifted to be who others needed her to be. I would love if we could dive into that a little.
Yeah, I think
we all can relate.
Yeah, and during my own work, I really started connecting with these versions of self. And First Girl, as I call it, is that little girl that's carefree and doesn't care what anyone thinks and just is goofy and silly. And maybe we can remember that. Maybe we can't even remember a time when we felt that way. But even in utero, we can think there was a time before we learned to become something different, to try to keep safe. And that's that First Girl. But Hurt Girl happens often around like 8 years old for women, where we start realizing we get those messages, like you said, of like, be polite, be good, don't be angry, don't do this, be a good girl. And we realize like that First Girl, that wild version of us can't be here. It's not safe. And so we become this other version of ourself, the Hurt Girl, who is, okay, I know who I need to be, whether that's get good grades or be polite or be funny or whatever role it is, right? We learn what we need to be and who we need to be in order to be loved and accepted. And for a child, that is survival. Love and acceptance means survival. And so our child brain is very good at protecting us and keeping us safe and forming these identities. And so Hurt Girl becomes that version of us that often for women is the people pleaser or the good one, the responsible one, the one who makes everybody happy. And we start to then live as women from that place. And then we wonder why we're struggling in relationships or self-esteem or self-love or confidence or all of these areas. It's because that Hurt Girl is still running our life.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So true. All right, let's talk about New Year's Day 2020. Why is that day? Why was that day so significant?
Well, it's the beginning of the selfish year that I wrote the book about. And at the time I was married to my second husband, we'd had this whirlwind elopement in Rome. And, you know, we were both like working online. And so we were traveling for 6 months. We ended up moving to Spain and we bought an apartment in Valencia in the historic district and renovated it. You know, externally on paper, we had it all.
Sounds lovely. Sounds
lovely,
perfect, right?
Yeah. Internally, I was dying. I was miserable and I was really, really desperately unhappy and confused about that because it's like, wait, I've worked on myself. I've built this great life. Why am I so unhappy? I have no reason to be. What I didn't know at the time was I was in an emotionally abusive relationship. And a lot of the women I work with find themselves in an emotionally abusive relationship, but you don't really see it when you're in it. You're just confused and you feel like you're going crazy and you feel like you're the problem. And that's how I felt. And so I was really desperate for change, but I didn't know what to do. Nothing was working. And so I got to the beginning of 2020 and I have a group of friends, and wherever we are in the world, we get on a call the first of the year and we talk about, you know, what did you manifest last year and what's your word for the year? What are you going to manifest this year? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know what tomorrow's going to look like, you know? And I kept thinking, what's my word for 2020? And this word selfish kept bubbling up. And I was like, I can't choose that. Like, that's exactly what I'm not supposed to be. But it wouldn't leave me alone. So I was like, you know what? Selfish is my word for 2020. And they were like, cool, let's see what happened. Okay. And that set me off on an experiment, because I thought, well, selfless hadn't really been working for me up until that point. What if I chose myself in every decision for an entire year? What if I did what was right for me? And so I decided to embark on a selfish experiment for the year, which ended up changing my life in every level.
Okay. Wow. So, why do you think it's so hard, especially for women, to embrace being selfish without guilt?
Yeah, guilt. I call guilt a superhighway in every woman's brain. We're just like, before you know it, you feel guilty about everything. And it becomes almost like this free pass of not having to like do the hard thing, right? Well, I feel guilty, so I won't leave the marriage. I feel guilty about hurting him, so I'll stay. And I stayed 10 years too long in my first marriage. And a lot of that was this guilt, this idea of being selfless and like, just suck it up, just deal with it, just figure it out, keep trying. And so when we have guilt, we really just allow it to keep us stuck, keep us in status quo. We're not challenging ourselves. There's not a lot inspiring about sitting in guilt. But it's something that we do as women, and we have to challenge that. And so for me, in order to choose myself for a whole year, I had to reckon with that guilt superhighway going, but you're doing something bad. You're going to disappoint him. You're hurting him. You know, what will people think? All of this, I had three, my kids were all adults at the time. What are my kids going to think? And so I really had to reckon with this concept of guilt and challenging it. And in the book, I talk about how to recognize your own guilt highway in your brain. And then how to challenge it and how to work through it and actually, instead of indulging that guilt, challenge it and work through it so you can actually be free of the guilt and stop letting it make your decisions.
Well, that's huge. That's so important, because so often, you know, it does, it gets us. And then really, are we making the best decision? And, you know, like you said, you're just kind of hanging out in the guilt versus maybe making some better decisions that would be better for everybody. Now, you said that you were married at 19, and you mentioned discovering a formula to make your marriage work, people-pleasing. And how did that shape your understanding of love and self-worth?
Yeah, I mean, people-pleasing was how I made it all work. I was an expert people-pleaser, and I could shape-shift and become whatever was necessary in order to avoid the conflict, in order to make everybody else okay. And it worked because it kept all the problems at bay, right? It kept everything under the rug, nice and tidy. Let's not look at the problems. As long as I'm not rocking the boat, then we're okay. And, you know, I say it worked because it kept me married. It kept me from having to face the problems. But ultimately, of course, it breaks down. It's not sustainable. And so then I had to really start to realize that, wait a second, what I'm actually doing is abandoning myself over and over until I didn't know who I was anymore. And again, so many women that I talk to, that I work with, that I help, say the same thing. Like, I've lost myself. I'm sure you hear that a lot too, right? I've lost myself. I don't know who I am anymore. Yeah, it's because you've been abandoning yourself to try to keep the peace. And at some point, especially in midlife, women are like, I can't do it anymore.
Right. Yeah. And it's been so long since you've thought of yourself, one first, but also a lot of times as an individual, not as a wife, not as a mom, not as the driver, the meal preparer, you know, all the things. And it is scary because you're like, who am I?
Yeah.
You know, I just fell into all this. I've been doing this, but then that can be kind of a slippery slope, because then are you just a victim? You know, how do we avoid that? Like, then feeling like such a victim that then now you're just, you know, like, oh, poor me.
Right. I lived like a victim most of my life, blaming everybody else for my problems. If only he would change, if only, you know, he would be different, if only he would stop drinking, if only he would, you know, do this or that. And it kept me feeling like the good guy, right? Like, I look like I'm the good one in the relationship because all the blame gets put on him. And it's a convenient way to avoid having to look at the parts of ourselves that are uncomfortable that we don't like. And that's in my selfish year, because also COVID happened during my selfish year. And the first thing I did in January was I booked a one-way flight out of Spain. I was like, I'm going to go back to Canada and I'm going to just take some time to myself. And then the borders closed from the pandemic. And I was like, oh, interesting.
So I spent,
the universe has me right where she wants me. And so I spent most of that year by myself in isolation, which caused me to go so deep into facing those dark parts, facing the shame, facing the parts I had never really faced fully. And I realized that that's really ultimately the key is like, be with yourself and stay with yourself and learn how to stop abandoning yourself.
Yeah.
And you start to understand who you really are. You find yourself again. And that was a huge part of my journey that year.
And, you know, it's really interesting, right? You picked the word, though. You manifested, not the whole pandemic, but you manifested your time for what the way you needed it, because it's really amazing that you had that year. And because of the circumstances of the world, like then, sometimes, you know, you had that look in the mirror, right? And sometimes I've said many times, I look in the mirror, or I see something reflected in my children's behavior. I was like, it is like looking in the mirror and it's not that pretty. Like, you know, I was like, that's a part of me that I identify with. You know, in doing that, like, it made me think of when you were talking about the whole cycle and all of these things, like many women married young and have children, and maybe like it's years and years till they've ever truly lived alone.
Yes.
Right? You get married and then you have kids. And then even if you divorce, you have children. Even if you marry, like the children are with you. It's like, wow. Like, because, and you know, it's whether it's easier or harder, you're just with yourself. And it allows, it is a great opportunity if you seize it to focus on that.
Yeah, I know. I was living alone for the first time in my life at 51. And so, and yeah, a lot of women are experiencing that too, or afraid of it. And for me to spend that whole year alone was a, like you said, it's an incredible opportunity that I really was intentional about because of the selfish experiment of like, I have to get to know myself if I'm actually going to make choices that are right for me. I have to get to know who I am. And so a lot of that year was solitude and really learning how to do that, how to find first girl again and bring her out of the closet and then learn who I really am underneath all of the layers of hurt and pain and you know, experiences that cover up our connection to ourself. And so in the book, I also give you selfish strategies, I call it. So I take what I've learned over that year and I give it to you in ways that are like, I call them micro changes, small things you can do daily that will help you no matter what's going on in your life. If you're still at home with the kids, if you're busy, like whatever, you can still do this work yourself to come home to yourself, to learn how to prioritize and stop being a people pleaser and stop abandoning yourself. So I really break it down into manageable steps.
That's amazing. You know, and that's helpful, right? Because we all need like, right, okay, well, I don't know what to do. Right. I mean, somewhere deep in you do, I'm sure, because then these prompt you and you're like, okay, but still, it's a pattern of behavior that most of us have done for so many years of our lives.
Yeah.
And anytime we impart or embark on a change, it can be challenging.
Yeah, well, for sure. Because you have so many factors, right? You've got your own fear of the unknown and the change. You've got other people who have their idea of what you should be doing. And then, like we said, the guilt and the worry and the uncertainty. But not only that, you're going to have to require more of yourself In order to make that change, you have to become a bigger version of yourself. And that doesn't happen until you start walking that path. And then you have the growth and the opportunities. So it really is a lot of factors. And then we've got the brain that's been wired to keep you safe and want you to stay in the familiar patterns. This is what the brain does. I always say the brain doesn't want you to be successful. The brain wants you to stay right where you are because familiarity means safety. So we have to deal with that. Your nervous system is going to be all freaking out if you start showing up differently in your life. So there's a lot of layers of this work that need to be addressed. And if you don't look at them all, we tend to self-sabotage, and we'll revert back. And so, it's a lot of factors.
That is. Now, you didn't breeze over, but you told us, you and your husband at the time ended up in Spain. But I want to ask, and I know this, but you booked your one-way ticket, but your husband didn't stop you, did he?
He did not. And I write about that in my book. It's the chapter called Doorways, where I've booked my one-way flight. I've had the conversation, which pretty much went I'm raising my standards and this isn't it. If you want to join me in that, amazing. But I'm going to take some space to figure this out. But there I am with my bag thinking I'll be gone for a few weeks, maybe a month, maybe a couple months. And he didn't even walk me to the door. He just was sitting on the couch, letting me go. And I was really mad at him for that at first. I was like, you didn't fight for me and you didn't try to keep me, from leaving. But ultimately, when I sat down to write the book, I realized that was a gift that he gave me because I had to make the decision. And he didn't make it easy for me. And he didn't engage in that decision, which felt really painful at the time. But I had to own it. I had to be like, regardless of how you feel or what you are or are not doing in this moment, this is my decision. And it was really one of the first times where I was like, I'm going to do this hard thing. I'm going to do it on my own. And here I go. And I had to walk through that door.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's very powerful just in and of itself, because it just gave you, that what you needed. Because what if he had? Right. What if he had put up more of a fight, right? And there would have been a part of you potentially that would have responded. So I agree with you. What a gift.
Truly, because I was still deep in the people-pleasing mode at that time. So, I think he could have maybe convinced me to stay, but it was exactly what I needed. And then, the borders closed and he was stuck in Spain and I was stuck in Canada for quite a while. And so for me, it was exactly what I needed.
Right. And obviously it gave you some real clarity on your life and on who you were and really what you wanted, which ultimately was not to stay in that marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. And I gave myself a lot of time to get there. I didn't feel the pressure of I need to know right away. I gave myself that whole year to really work on myself and feel into, is this marriage going to work? We tried therapy, we're still working on it together. I wasn't ready to say no until the end of that year when it was clear. It was crystal clear at that point that this was, this was the end. And, we both agreed at that point. So, I think that's another thing that a lot of women that work with me struggle with is, how long should I give myself before I decide I want a divorce? And there is no right or wrong answer to that. I always say, this is your journey. There are no rules. Give yourself enough time that you need to feel like you can walk away with integrity so you can sleep at night. You feel like you've done everything you can. But don't stay too long because it can start to become a new comfort zone of just staying on the fence, I call it, right? One foot in the marriage, one foot out. And just sort of in limbo land, which is so hard. And, like I said, I stayed 10 years too long in my first marriage thinking, should I stay? Should I go? So it's a fine balance. And that's where it's really hard to do on your own. And so we need those support people in our lives to help us see clearly if what's the reality here? What's really going on? And what do you need to do? What are your decisions right now? That's hard to do on our own because we're so clouded by, our feelings and everything.
Well, and the thing that, again, being in our business, divorce lawyers, many women have asked that over the many years. What should I do? And I say, if there's a safety issue, I will advise you to leave. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily like, but leave, right? If it's safety. But otherwise, this is you. And, you know, part of what, and I've noticed this is my perception and my experience with many women. So they really think about it, right? They make these decisions, but usually for years. But by the time, because maybe they were on the fence, that they are ready, they are done. Like, oh, yeah. They are so done. They are ready. But their husband is just hearing of it. Right. And not that I'm in defense of them, but I'm saying, listen, you've been talking to yourself about it for months or years.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he was oblivious, whatever. The reality is he hasn't been a part of that conversation. So really, when you spend all that time in limbo, it's not fair to your marriage. It's not fair to your spouse. You think you're being that, right? That's what we tell ourselves. No, I'm holding it together. It's not fair to anybody because you're really not being authentic in what you really want and who you are. And then I was also thinking about it when you talked about your year, because what could have happened, it didn't, you know, because all things happen really in the right order and for what is your higher purpose. But it could have been that you found out who you were and you really could show up, right, as Valerie. And he may have been like, I love this woman.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, we put ourselves in a position of like, okay, this is who I am. Do you like, you know, you want to be with me or not, but it's okay if you don't. But now I know
exactly
who I am and who I'm showing up for in this relationship. So in a lot of ways, like when we're people pleasing and we're never putting ourselves first, we're never really being honest about who we are in the relationship for the other person.
Exactly. 100%. And you nailed it when you said, like, if you're on the fence and, you know, maybe you're talking to your girlfriends about leaving, or maybe you're writing in your journal about it, but you're not having the honest conversation with your spouse. Yeah, you are to some extent not revealing the truth. You aren't being authentic.
Yeah.
And that isn't fair. As Brené Brown says, clear is kind. And it might be the hard conversation to have, but it is the kind conversation to have, to be completely honest. And like you said, when you're doing the work on yourself while you're still in that relationship, it can also lead you to a more authentic place. And to your point, right? Be like, well, maybe we can make it work if we're actually both being honest and real with each other instead of pretending.
Yeah, about who we are, because, right, like when we're not and we're people pleasing and trying to be something we're not, the resentment is going to build, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just does.
Yeah.
I can speak this from experience because I've had a lot of conversations in my head, you know, and I always go a certain way and I may get to a resolution, but yet, if I had engaged the other person, that would have put myself more vulnerable, right? Like, if you put yourself out there, but at least now you're allowing that conversation to happen. And I just think it's a pattern that so many of us can fall into. It's like not passing like blame or, you know, shade on anybody. It's just like, I think at the time, it seems like the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
But I think what you've talked about on the other end, not really for yourself, not really, or really for the other people. I mean, frankly.
So true. And that's where we have to really hold ourselves responsible because, as you said, right, when we're using guilt, for example, to say, well, I don't want to tell him that I'm thinking of a divorce or how I feel because I don't want to hurt his feelings. And it sort of soothes you into this idea that you're taking the high road or, you know, you're protecting him or her in some way. But what you're really doing is, yeah, you're not being honest and you're doing it because you're scared perhaps of the reaction. But when you can actually be forthright and honest and take responsibility for that of like, this is my pattern. We all have them. My pattern was people pleasing and, you know, abandoning myself to keep the peace. I had to own that. And when I did, I had to really realize like that was a big part of the breakdown of my marriage was how I was showing up for far too long. And so we have to really be willing to take responsibility for our side of the street and own it and stop blaming and projecting and be like, I need to look at myself. And that's uncomfortable, but that's the word.
It is. It is uncomfortable, but it just is such a, I think, so important because now this I would love to know. because I don't know this answer. Because you spent this time, did this work. Okay, how did that work? I know that the marriage didn't survive that, but was there a period of time maybe that your kids were like, who is this? Like, I like the old version who said yes to everything or was always accommodating. Did you have any of that you had to go through it through?
Yeah, that's such a great question. With my kids, you know, they were excited for me to, you know, live on my own, to sort of discover myself, to go on that journey. And they really liked seeing me come into my power and make decisions that were right for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're like, we're so proud of you, Mom. And I think it really gave them permission to do that in their life as well. Mm-hmm. So with my kids, it was great and really, really empowering. And it actually helped our relationship because I think they respected me more. And that was one of the big reasons why I knew I had to leave my first marriage, because I knew if I didn't, they wouldn't respect me, seeing how I was willing to be treated. And so that was great. I think other people had issues with it or were uncomfortable. Family members, you know, when you start showing up differently and it's outside of the box of who they know you to be. Yeah, I certainly encountered a lot of that. Just like, who are you and what's going on with you? But that's part of the growth journey, is not everyone's going to understand it. And that's okay.
And I think that is so important that you said that, because that can happen sometimes, because we all have our perceptions, our beliefs of how people are showing up based on what they've done in the past, right? And sometimes we're all, you know, others are comfortable in the way, in those patterns, and that's disruptive. But that's okay. That's okay if that doesn't survive and you're being, you know, in integrity and who you are and honest. These are how I'm going to, you know, approach things and have relationships.
Yeah, exactly. It's your life. You only get one. Are you going to live it based on what other people think you should do? Or are you going to do the work to find your courage and your strength to live it in the way that's in alignment with who you really are? And when I figured that out, everything changed in my life. My health changed. I lost 55 pounds. I moved to Vancouver, a new city. You know, my business totally shifted and transformed. I started making more money than ever. You know, like everything changed for me when I realized, like, when I prioritize me, when I learn how to live in alignment with my truth, everything falls into place. And from there, you know, my life really just changed on every level, and relationships changed, friendships changed. It's been really incredible. And that's why I'm so excited to talk about this with women, because when you start to experience being the first in your life, being the main character, as we call it, right? Like, stop orbiting around other people and trying to make them happy, like be centered in yourself. And then all of a sudden, the decisions get easier, you have more clarity, and you start to make choices that actually like reflect the truth of who you are instead of reflecting what everybody else wants you to be.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, there's so much I want to talk about, but that was just on the journaling, because that was a big thing you emphasized in that year. And I would love for you to unpack a little bit about that, like that, why that was such a key part of your healing.
Yeah, journaling. It sounds so simple, and it is, but it's so profound if you do it with intention, which I did. I'd always been sort of a journaler, but in that year, my selfish year, I journaled daily. And what happens when you journal is it gives you a different way to process what's going on, right? So instead of being in the swirliness of your mind, you write it down and you look at it on the page, and you're able to detach and observe your experience, your thoughts, your feelings, and you start to see yourself better. And for me, what I noticed, like initially in the first part of that year, I would journal a lot about my ex and like, oh, he said this and I'm mad at him. And that's a normal part of the process. You're kind of obsessed with that person, and if only they would change. And you can see yourself doing that, right? But then there comes a point where you get bored of that, writing that every day. And it's like, okay, what else can I write about? That's dumb. And you get bored of that. And then you start going inward and you start getting a little more introspective and you start to really be able to see your patterns. Like, I remember one time I was journaling and I was like, hold on a second. I'm gaslighting myself in my own journal. Like, I'm like, I can't think that way. And, you know, because he would gaslight me a lot. And so I realized like his voice was still really in my head and my brain was still programmed around that gaslighting. And so I was able to see it and catch it in my journal. And so the journal really became like that place where I got really real with myself and I was able to have more compassion, I found, for myself because I wasn't just beating myself up in my head with my inner critic. I was like, oh, look at me writing that thing. Wow. That's really brave, or, you know, that's really sad or hard. And so it gives you this different relationship with yourself that's so healing and so important. And so in the book, I give you a lot of journal prompts to take into your journal so you can start that practice. And it really becomes a ritual that can change everything. And it's one of the most powerful things I've done for myself, for sure.
Wow. That's awesome. I've had a lot of people on the show and a lot of explanations about journaling and all the benefits, but that was a really good one. I appreciate that. Mm. Just a way for you to look at yourself and get sick of writing about the one thing. So moving on, that's awesome. I really think so.
Right. And the other cool thing about it is you can look back and you can see your progression, which is also so helpful because when you're in a healing mode or growth phase, it's almost like watching your hair grow. Like, it's so incremental. You can get frustrated. Like, oh, I'm still struggling with guilt. But if you go back and read what you wrote a year ago, you'll be like, oh my gosh, look how far I've come. And it really helps in that way too. And when I was writing the book, I went back to all my journals through that year. And it was really interesting to read it all and sort of see that whole progression. It really helped me in writing the book as well.
Wow. And you know, that what you just said is, I think, so powerful because you yourself can see your growth. You can see the changes. Again, not relying on someone externally telling you, you did this or you that. Like, no, you have now. You're like, yeah, I have. I don't need somebody else to tell me that. I can see where I've grown and become, you know, more understanding, more, you know, reflective.
Exactly. And confidence is a skill. And how we build confidence is we watch ourselves doing hard things. So when you go back and you read your journal, like, oh yeah, I remember I did that thing. Wow. You build more confidence, right? And so, yeah. And like you said, you're doing it yourself because you have to do the work. Nobody can do it for you. You know, we all know no one's coming to save us. You do the work yourself and certainly have guides, have a coach, have a lawyer, have your support team. But when you see yourself healing yourself, it really is so transformational.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, I got to touch on this before we go. I would like to talk a little about radical responsibility and why this is so essential for women, especially when you're recovering from toxic or imbalanced relationships.
Yeah, for sure. Because, again, like I said, it's easy for us to fall into patterns of victim or blaming or projecting because we're hurt. We're trying to protect ourselves. That's normal. That's fine. But there comes a point where you see that it's keeping you stuck and you're not growing. You're not feeling better. You're still in that negative place in your mind or critical or whatever. And it's just not healthy for you. And so that's where it's like, okay, are you ready to take radical responsibility for you, for your choices, for your thoughts, for your emotions and your actions? And when you're ready and you're like, yes, because I'm tired of giving my power away to everybody else and being bothered and being upset and feeling frustrated by what everybody else is doing, you want to be unbothered. Okay, you got to take radical responsibility. And that doesn't mean letting people off the hook. That does not mean we let people, you know, get a free pass. No, no, no. We hold people accountable. But yeah, radical responsibility means I'm in charge of my thoughts, emotions, and actions. And what are they? And am I happy with that? Or do I need to change something about that? And we all then have to see, what is our inner critic doing? How are we beating ourselves up about every little thing? Or where are we stuck in our brains in loops of thought that are not working for us? Where are we sabotaging ourselves? And what are the things we need to really reckon with? And once you are willing to do that, and I always say it's like everything and everybody becomes a mirror, and you see that reflection instead of seeing that person or that event you don't like, you see the reflection of yourself and go, how did I contribute to that? I see what I was doing there. And you start to get very curious about yourself. And that's when everything starts to unfold for you. It gets really exciting because, okay, maybe the bad news is no one's coming to save you, but it's also the good news because it means you have the power to save yourself. And once women realize that, it gets exciting because they can see that, like, I have ownership over me.
Yeah.
And that's hard and uncomfortable at times, but it's also so empowering and liberating.
Yeah, it really is. You can, if you can get past or just get through. I don't think you get past it, but understand you're afraid, maybe, but like the freedom that awaits you, just that of who you are and saving yourself is so much better. Mm-hmm. Because when you, like you said, when you're giving up that power or you're saying, no, save me from this, there's always a trade-off, you know?
That's right.
And it really is. And then are you really the best version of yourself to everyone else, because, you know, you're not really living fully. And I just love that, because I do feel that we do need to take, you know, radical responsibility for how we show up and for our actions and really for our future.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world is changing, especially the landscape of divorce. And you know, and there, I know my producers will laugh because we say this all the time, because somebody told us this, you know, that a man is not a financial plan. And it's okay if you entered it like that, but recognize anybody can choose to leave, and we have to have responsibility for ourselves, and we can do it. We can. Yes. That's the thing. And it's hard for me to watch when some women are just like just paralyzed by the fear. And it's like, you have so much within you.
Yep.
If you will just try, take a first step, right?
And if you're willing to do whatever it takes to get yourself out of that, like in my first marriage, I had 3 kids, no job, no degree, stay-at-home mom, you know, but I figured it out. And if you're willing to do whatever it takes, then you will, and you'll do it. And then you'll feel so proud of yourself. And that self-respect is so important. And like you said, right, it's like when we're relying on someone else for our survival, we will compromise. We will make choices that aren't right for us in order to stay. But when you figure it out, and I have a support group called the Phoenix for women who are out of transitioning out of divorce and beyond. And, you know, these women are finding jobs. They're, you know, they've got their own place often for the first time in their life. And they're so proud of themselves. They're like, everything in here I paid for, you know, and they feel so excited about their life because they no longer have to compromise on who they are, what they want in order to have stability. And so that's a hard road, but it's so rewarding.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing. I just love everything you're doing. Your book, it's wonderful. And Valerie, before we go, our show is called Women Winning Divorce. And, you know, we believe in winning in life, and that means something different to everyone. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, I love that question. So winning at life for me now means I walked away from a life that looked really good on paper, but was slowly killing me. And I built a life that doesn't require me to abandon myself, just like we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like I stopped playing the good girl. I stopped begging for crumbs from somebody, and I really just built the whole damn feast myself, you know? Really, it's not about money. It's not about, you know, success. It's about knowing that I don't have to be anybody but who I am, and I can wake up every morning and feel, like, proud of myself because I'm staying true to myself. And for me, if I can do that and stay true to myself each day and not abandon myself and make choices that reflect that, then that's winning for me. And it really, then everything else sort of takes care of itself. and the path unfolds. But really, that's the most important thing that I've discovered.
It's amazing. I love it. I love it. Now, before we go, I want you to tell our listeners, where can they find you for more information and resources?
Yeah, so you can get The Selfish Year anywhere you buy books, Amazon, wherever it's out there. And you can find me at valeriejones.ca. And you can see my programs. My Phoenix support group is there, and also the Selfish Women podcast.
Absolutely. That's so wonderful. Well, we've reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Valerie, for joining us to discuss the healing journey behind the Selfish Year. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.